This is an example of speech.
All our history of broiling wars.
Welcome to Tell Me What to Think, a free from oversight and free of charge, thoughtfully improvised, expletive deleted, details expanded, whistle blow hard, evergreen topical heat wave of a weekly conversation turned podcast, in which we discuss politics, global affairs, current events, and anything else that bubbles up from the unmoderated comment section in our brains. We urge you to join us and tell us what you think. To listen to the archives, go to stoneduckmedia.com or tellmewhattothink.com. You can contact us at tmwttpod@gmail.com. I'm Peter Albro. You can find me on Twitter at Bloated Nemesis, and I have with me, as always and forever, Charles Minnick, who is on Twitter at @green_weird, which is W-Y-R-D. This episode, we tell you what to think about the 2020 Democratic field so far. Prepare to get righteous and reactionary. This is Tell Me What to Think. Time to get on our soap pod and tell you what to think.
Fighting over against that sell cocaine is just incontrovertibly insane. Remigation of the old voice network. Decision signed with a shake and a smirk. Centralized states get turned a blind eye. Those who benefit never ask why. Just sit back and enjoy some coca beans. They don't wonder what profit really means. Those indicates from the ivory tower. Waste your life in a struggle for power. All men thus reduced to fleas. So fucking just do whatever
so
you
I kind
please.
Of was thinking
a
about
nice
that.
In Uganda to the poor crack babies.
Sure, qualitatively judging candidates.
Yeah, I was coming up with some criteria right before we started.
Yeah, what were you thinking?
I have five criteria.
Okay.
That are money, voting record, platform, supporters, and reputation. I was trying to figure out the most independent variables that I could.
Yeah, so define money for me.
That is how much money that the candidate has on hand. Like, for instance, Bernie Sanders transferred like $10 million from his other accounts into his presidential runs. And combined with his $18 million in donations, which is also an important factor, he's, I think, the best financed candidate right now of the announced candidates.
So to me, that's like a... Do you view that as more like just an electability or how, like, a quality an individual should use to, like, decide their vote?
I mean, it's a metric, so one way or another, people can use it however they want to sure. Measure their vote. I mean, some people would view that as a negative, and some people would view it as a positive. So, I mean, but within these individual metrics, like money is like, again, how much money you've raised, but how much of it was bundled versus what's your average fucking donation?
Yeah, where is it coming from? Because, I mean, on some level, and either all coming from a few, groomed billionaires or billionaires grooming you, or it comes from, you know, millions of small donations. Both speak to a level of like organization, but it's kind of a sort of moral difference where you're directing your organization and competency toward.
Mm-hmm. And that kind of goes to the supporters part, but that's slightly different because that also includes like volunteers and, you know, shall we say, media figures and other celebrities?
Yeah, I think 538 is doing, like, how other politicians have, like, endorsed candidates. But I think, I mean, I can't help but think of, like, what are their Twitter followers like? Or which advocacy groups are aligning with certain candidates, like, I don't know, like a Planned Parenthood or something like that.
Citizen Action of Wisconsin.
Some, you know, because I can, a couple come to mind, like in Wisconsin here, where I'm like, oh, if I'm seeing, what's the one? One Wisconsin or something?
One Wisconsin Now. That's a good one.
Do I see them edging towards one? That might speak to me about, you want to think for yourself, but, you know, it influences a decision.
Sure. That goes to the other metric, which is platform, because those groups will, I mean, probably when, especially when the election gets closer, they'll start sidelong endorsing people by their platforms. You know, by what issues they come up in favor of.
Yeah, there was a, I was watching an old episode of Veep last night, and that came about very explicitly. They're trying to cut funding, and then some, like, I don't know, the Ohio Democratic Party or something got pissed about some sort of business thing. But, I mean, that's a sort of cynical take on it. There's also more, like, issue-based, policy-based.
Mm-hmm. And again, these are metrics which can go one way or another. So you may like Elizabeth Warren for the fact that she said no bank is too big to break or no or too big to jail. But if you're a banker or looking at it from the other perspective, whatever your job is, you know, mm-hmm. that would be a negative.
Yeah, for sure. Although, I don't know. I recall thinking once about this and... well, we have a mutual friend who's in the printing industry, and he's like, I don't give a shit about the printing industry when I cast my vote. Like, I've never once considered that.
Well, yeah, but banking is, like, one of the most, shall we say, tightly controlled sectors of the economy. Like, the way people vote will really impact your bottom line pretty quickly.
Do you think there's an element of, like, where you are in sort of the hierarchy of the industry or employer?
There should be, because from my asshole capitalist perspective, if an executive in another company is getting super rich and successful off of just fraud and breaking the rules, then that's not really fair and should be corrected. I mean, because if you're trying to do the right thing and follow the rules so you don't get hemmed up, then it's really irksome to see somebody not getting hemmed up for doing what is explicitly wrong, like Deutsche Bank.
That's why a lack of enforcement just very directly encourages like a market value to breaking the law.
Yeah, factored in. I mean, companies already factor in potential legal costs, but if those legal costs are zero, then go for broke, right? That's what we learned in 2006 and 2010.
Yeah. And then what was the last one?
Reputation.
Reputation, yeah.
I mean, it's not exactly your supporters or your platform or even your voting record, but it is, you know, that nebulous quality that people attach to you. And if there's some, shall we say, uniformity in reputation or how you're perceived, then that could work for or against you.
That,
because we're still litigating 2016.
Well, yeah. Yeah, and whether you like it or not, I mean, people are going to take bits from the past. Like, to me, especially after losing the last election, but even into that, Hillary might have scored poorly on a reputation. Like, you know, you'd always hear the good stories about her, like professionally speaking, like everyone, like even John McCain's like, ah, I love working with Hillary. I'm not going to vote for her, but I love, you know, like she's competent and smart. And, but she just had too many easy to target, past scandals or brushes with scandal.
And some really negative decisions.
And, but there's like a, it's like, even if you, so let's say, you know, there was the Hillary supporter who totally doesn't, like, believe any of the bad stuff ever said, you know, like, really over the top, but this person genuinely believes that. I feel as if it kind of, like, still affects your thinking. Because it's like you just get those bad feelings about people, you know, from, especially, like, from the mind control box, you know.
Mm.
That's why, like, the general bad vibes online kind of often work. But anyway, what were you saying?
Oh, that's like the 5-minute hate isn't all that's being broadcast anymore.
Yeah.
So, how do you want to break down these candidates? Should we go by the most electable or the ones who have declared alphabetically?
Well, okay, first, ground rules. Are we counting Biden?
I mean, if we're not counting Biden, we can't count Mike Gravel, and I wouldn't be okay with that. So,
but even Mike Gravel, as far as you've told me, has announced
his announcement.
It's more of like a formality.
Well, neither is Mayor Pete, so if you want to talk about him.
But I think, so I think those two can be in. And I think Biden, because he has not said, I am running for president.
No.
He's not answered that question, and especially given, these things that, he's had some bad headlines the past few days, so...
Do you want to talk about that first? Because we can just, dismiss Joe Biden with, a few sentences right here. Do you remember, 4 years ago when Samantha Bee on The Daily Show had a whole segment about touchy Biden?
And I do.
Montages of Biden being inappropriate with women in public.
Yeah.
Just invading their personal space. And, I mean, maybe that's drawing too fine of a line, but come on. Fucking Franken resigned for only slightly more than this, but certainly not the number of cases.
Yeah, and it's like, why... What is so great about Joe Biden that we even have to, deal with the messy gray areas of this type of stuff? Like, why do we even have to have that conversation involved in the person we want to be, representing the Democratic Party against? It just seems like self-defeating to even
bring him up.
What's so amazing that we need to overlook it?
He's a Delaware Democrat. If he gets elected, he's going to hand fossil fuel companies finance basically everything that they want. So, yeah, that's worth any price, no matter what the damage is to the party's reputation.
So you're saying, business people, the business community,
are
willing to overlook this, and they are going to keep pushing.
Oh, yeah, they've doubled down on the status quo. Especially in light of that DCC or DCCC story that came out about how they're going to, shall we say, put the finger on the scale against potential upstarts.
Potential, primary challenges?
Yeah, AOC and the like.
Isn't...
But they also, the party itself started taking a bunch more money from, fossil fuel companies and other, shall we say, less than desirable sectors of the economy.
I thought they stopped taking money from fossil fuel. I thought that was a big thing that got announced at one of the...
Yeah, and they just retracted that.
Oh. Okay. Yeah. They repealed it for the election.
Well, you gotta stock up gunpowder.
When all of the attention is on them. Once no one's paying attention anymore. That's disappointing. It's kind of a problem with the... It's on one hand, they do good work, trying to beat Republicans. And the other hand, it's they shouldn't even be involved in protecting against primary challenges.
Right, it's not really the party's, the overarching party's job.
Once you're in office, it's your responsibility to keep your constituents happy.
Or do the job, as they say.
Yeah. Okay, so not counting Biden or any other, hypotheticals. If they have not announced an actual candidacy or a firm commitment, intention of having a candidacy, then they aren't counted.
Mm-hmm.
So let's just kind of start at the top of the... I don't have a poll in front of me, but Bernie. I think Bernie.
Alphabetical list in front of me.
Oh, okay. So, awesome. Okay, is last name or first name?
A very pared down version, because according to Ballotpedia, there's 211 filed candidates so far on the just for the Democratic Party.
Yeah. We don't have that time.
Yeah. Okay. So here's the highlights. Cory Booker.
Booker has some. Bad connections in his past, so that would kind of speak to policy or past votes.
Yeah, but he's co-sponsored some pretty significant legislation. He introduced the legalization bill.
Yes, Yeah.
So that's a feather in his hat, however small.
And that's definitely what he's more campaigning on in terms of platform.
Yeah. But he doesn't really have any reputation.
Well, no, I mean, from a...
He was, I guess, his reputation as a mayor of Newark, right?
Yeah, he has a rep. He has, like, a very sort of... sort of beyond record, I'm saying. His reputation, I think, is very kind of pro-little guy. You know, he had people staying at his house during that Hurricane Sandy or whatever. You know, and that's pretty much what launched his political... or his, you know, national... reputation.
Right, his Senate run.
I don't know if most people know that, but it's there.
Okay.
Well, the conservatives all talk about, not that we have to do, like, the conservative spin on every candidate, but they all talk about the I am Spartacus moment or whatever. That's, like, a big deal to them.
What?
perfect response. Okay, let's move on.
Anyway, okay, Julian Castro.
I don't know. What do you think about Julian Castro?
I can't really believe he's being included in the serious list of candidates, but, you know, it is what it is.
He was a cabinet secretary. I mean, there's some respect granted toward that. I heard him in an interview, and he was, I believe, Housing and Urban Development Secretary. Mm-hmm. And he's very knowledgeable about affordable housing issues. So if that, like, comes to the forefront as, you know, what the people want, he might be well suited. I don't
know. Well, one negative that I've heard pretty loudly against him is that during his time as Secretary of Urban Housing and such, he basically presided over the biggest loss of equity amongst African-Americans and people of color that, you know, this country's ever seen.
Yeah, so that's... Well, I mean, so are there specific decisions or policies of his department?
Well, he was responsible for how the... not the foreclosure crisis, but the secondary crisis was resolved. You know, the title problem.
Okay.
And, yeah, a lot of people got foreclosed on and otherwise lost equity in the write-downs, and it's kind of on him, so...
Yeah, so that strikes me as a little, like, lacking in maybe some competency in his record.
Yeah,
And he's really not made a, like, you know, media splash for me to really know much else about him. Positively or negatively.
Yeah, it's kind of maybe good for a second or third tier candidate right now not to make a splash, because you can get burned by media attention.
Yeah, you don't want to give people like a year's worth of some stupid criticism to make about you every single day whenever people look up your name online or something like that. But he has to get to the donor amount.
Yeah. Yes, I don't. So I'm not sure if they've announced who has gotten into the debate so far, but it's pretty clear that at least four candidates have made it.
Some of the candidates have announced their campaigns have announced,
mm-hmm.
But that'd I don't think that's been verified by the DNC as far as I know.
Like Bernie, and I think Elizabeth Warren may have done it. I think she may have actually just fallen short, but Kamala Harris has definitely made it, and Cory Booker has.
You'd think Warren... Well, we'll get to Warren. Okay, yeah. Who's next? All right,
John Delaney.
I don't know who that is.
Representative, yeah.
Who is that?
A former Maryland representative.
Oh.
A self-made businessman, Delaney at one point was the youngest CEO on the New York Stock Exchange.
I'm very, very not interested. This is okay. Just my gut reaction to that. This is my animalistic political side.
He looks like a generic white guy, I'm sorry. Tulsi Gabbard.
Oh, you tell me what to think about Tulsi Gabbard.
So she would be the first American Samoan and Hindu member of... Well, she's the first American Samoan and Hindu member of Congress. And a Iraq war veteran. But she has some very controversial points in her record.
She's like, one of the... I just want to jump in. She's one of the few legislatures that I know of that I only know about foreign policy things of, and I don't really... I can't directly tie her to some sort of domestic thing. I mean, I've been told she's really liberal on domestic things, but I don't actually... I've never heard her talk about it or anything like that, so...
Yeah. Well, she's a representative from Hawaii, which means Hawaii is, like, probably the bluest state in the country, most reliably.
Sure.
So she's kind of pretty progressive, but the problematic dealings with Bashar al-Assad and, you know, Modi over in India, it's really... I don't know. I don't think I would ever want to vote for her, so...
Yeah. Hey, and supporters. That kind of speaks to supporters on that one.
Yeah. And... The one problem I've always had with her is that, you know, she tries to paint herself as a peace candidate, and the only thing that she says about war is, like, I'm against regime change war. And it's like, well, as a veteran of the Iraq War, you should absolutely know that there's way more to, you know, military missions and, you know, the various things that the military does than just, quote, regime change wars, unquote.
Mm-hmm.
Like, she's absolutely A-okay with bombing whoever with drone strikes, so, yeah.
Yeah, yeah, because, like, the war on terror is the military sort of national security issue of the day.
Yeah.
And, now, does she consider that type of stuff regime? Like, does she have a very loose definition of regime shame?
She's voted for, I'm pretty sure she's voted for almost all of Trump's,
So then that's kind of, I don't know. Yeah, I mean, that just sounds like George W. Bush to me.
Yeah, she's...
I'm against regime changes, but maybe there's some room for...
Not invade another country.
Yes.
anyway, next is Kirsten Gillibrand.
I find Kirsten Gillibrand to be very pleasant. And yeah. I would like to hear what she thinks about things, but for some reason, I don't see any articles or videos or news reports about her. I don't know.
The one thing that I've heard brought up is her ties to... Well, first of all, she's a relatively progressive member of Congress.
She has, I believe, the highest, lowest Trump score in the Senate. At least last time we checked, I believe that was on a couple months ago.
Yeah, let's check again.
But she, I mean, I've heard a couple interviews with her, and she actually gave one of the most specific answers to...
She still does. Okay.
So, there's the concern if you do something like Medicare for All... really any of the versions of it, how do you transition from current to that? Do we care about the insurance companies? And she gave an answer that seemed fairly specific to me and was really easily understood and kind of populist, and I liked it a lot. And essentially she just said, let's start with a public option. People can choose those companies if they want, but we're going to make the public option really good. And if they all fail, then screw them. And I was like, yeah.
Yeah, not good enough.
Why? Why is that not good enough?
Because the public option is just continuing the market, this whole insurance exchange market. And that's kind of where the ACA really, really fell down.
Oh, I'm sorry. This was as the transition to whatever, like, single payer or something it turns into.
Oh, yeah. I mean, but the public option should have been, like, I don't see why that's controversial. That should have been included in the ACA originally, but...
When I heard the interview, which we'll get to Harris, I guess, but that was when she was getting some buzz for giving some, I don't know, whatever, wishy-washy answer, if I recall, about letting insurance companies fail.
Yeah.
It's
kind of a big issue. I admit it will displace a large sector of the economy, but a lot of those companies have made a lot of money by offering people medical insurance, so if they unwind with just a giant pile of money, I really don't see who's the aggrieved victim here.
I feel like a lot of the labor from that would be
absorbed by other companies?
By other companies that either kind of, you know, are like hospital systems or whatever, that are providing, because more people are covered, more services, because that, I imagine that'll expand, or by government bureaucracy of, you know, management of programs and, I don't know, it seems right. Like the labor part is not I don't buy it.
Right. I mean, we offered, retraining for all of those factory workers who get laid off when their plants closed, so maybe they could learn to code.
That's a right wing talking point.
Yeah. I know, I hate it, but you know, it's not like those people are gonna like end up destitute and homeless like so many factory workers were close to doing.
Yeah. I'd agree with that.
And hey, all those blacksmiths got laid off and nobody seemed to care.
Who are we on?
We're still in Chris and Jill.
Oh, yeah.
Pretty close ties to Wall Street. And,
yes.
Like, has been seeking financing from a lot of those connected Wall Street companies. So I don't know if she's... that is part of her reputation. It will hurt her.
And I would expand upon that. I think there's a little bit of a chicken and egg thing here. Like, she announces her presidency. And as far as I know, there has been no public... latching onto her campaign, and so she's probably not, and probably has poor infrastructure, although I don't know that for a fact, to get, like, small donors and all that. And so I feel like, you know, you're saying there's reports of her trying to seek, like, Wall Street backing and funding. I mean, it feels like she's not able to get funding elsewhere, and so... You know, she's going back to the well.
Mm-hmm. I mean, that's pretty accurate, I think.
And that's troubling in terms of supporters, because there's a lack of quantity and a lack of quality then. Even if the record's good.
Yeah, even if her record is good, it's just another name onto the pile. They're going to have 2 days of debates.
Yes. People will, like, camp out. They should do it at, like, Coachella or something.
It might be interesting to be outside. We'll see where it is. Maybe we can make a road trip of it.
A big stadium.
Huh.
Like gladiators. So, who's next? Gillibrand?
Kamala Harris.
Oh, okay. So we had Arthur Harris.
Voting record in the Senate has been one of the most progressive. Her Trump support is... She's in the top 10. She's only the 7th down.
Yeah. I think, as far as I understand, she's been a fairly competent voter. I don't know how many past bills or anything originated with her. But, I mean, then she has this prosecutorial background, which is...
Yeah, that's a huge
thing. Throwing up a lot of red flags. And she doesn't... I don't know, she's kind of attacking that one head on. Like, she's trying to portray herself as the, like, Preet Bharara ethical prosecutor. Like,
yeah, no way.
And I don't know, I mean...
Okay, did she embrace the Innocence Project and, like, start... Like, I'm pretty sure as AG she didn't make a... what are those units called? Cropping up in places like Philadelphia and other. It's not cold cases. It's not a cold cases unit, but the unit that just goes through and double checks cases for prosecutorial error.
Excuse me. What I'm proposing is there seems to be a dissonance between her record and her platform.
Mm-hmm.
And she's trying to use the platform to make up for. A perception of record, but then also sort of lean in on the... I don't know. It's interesting and maybe counterproductive. I don't know.
Yeah, I mean, the more she brings up or tries to fight her record, the more it's going to stain her, because people are just going to be looking into it even more.
Well, but she's also, like, she's leaning into it on, like, okay, so, here's, like, kind of, like, maybe a microcosm, and this is, as far as I understand things, she got some heat for being, for, like, being a little draconian about, like, school tardiness, right?
Yeah, she put parents in jail for that shit.
Yeah, okay. And now she's putting forth some, like, really, like, progressive, I think it was, like, an education, like, sample piece of legislation, that really, like, you know, is a fairly liberal, it's actually a way to get federal funds, more, like, to get more federal funds to school systems in states that are undercutting school funding. So, like, not that it was brought up specifically, but I picture, like, a state like Wisconsin that kind of has that, like, thumbs their nose at their big city.
Mm-hmm.
So, in our case, Milwaukee, and their school system. They're always, like, the source of problems, but never the center of a solution to a problem. Right. And so she's trying to address problems in education through legislation. And so she's being like, yeah, I'm tough, but I'm also progressive. I just care about getting the kids in school. And so it kind of comes down to, well, what do you trust? I mean, do they just balance out in your mind, record and platform? Do you not trust one? I mean, records are kind of harder to refute. That's
right.
The brilliance of them.
It's record than their voting platform.
On the other hand,
if people
change.
Or, you know, they adapt according to fucking polling numbers and behavioral samples.
Or just changes in culture, too. I mean, you know, like Barack Obama was like, I believe in marriage between a man and a woman. I mean, I'm cool with gay people, but, you know.
Mm-hmm.
But he
changed rapidly.
His campaign, or I mean, his administration, you know, probably conservatively adapted, but we're not a hindrance to that happening.
Right. Eventually bowed to the winds of change.
Yeah, they didn't. I don't think they. I don't recall, but maybe a constitutional scholar might know better. But I don't recall them like writing a bunch of amicus briefs or something, you know, in Oberfell, like really trying to fight it tooth and nail. Like if that case came up now, the Trump administration would be all over with culture war bullshit.
Oh yeah, definitely.
And so I don't know. I'm sympathetic to a platform argument, but it's like you have to make up for that record. That's back to who we're not supposed to talk about, but Biden. But Biden has, like, the longest record of anyone alive. He was in the Senate for, like, 40 years.
Right. Again, one of the worst records.
Yes. And so it's like, do I believe that he could govern in a much more progressive fashion than Joe Biden in 1983? Yes, I do believe that. But he has to, it's the burden of proof is on him.
Yeah.
Not on me.
We could, okay, we're not going to talk about him. I'm not gonna,
we can lace Biden throughout. Anyway, who's next?
Next is former Colorado Governor John Hickenlooper.
Yeah, pass. No, do you have anything to say? I don't.
Wow, okay.
do you have anything? I don't know. Like, he seems like a fine governor, I guess. I don't know.
He's against legalization.
Yeah, but he also supported it, right?
I mean, he allowed it to go through.
Yeah. He was like, the people spoke. I'm not going to... Hey, and by the way, we've seen governors in states with referendums in the past couple of years that have stood... Or you know, the controlling political party has stood in the way of referendums.
Sure.
Like in Michigan and shit. And so not doing that is, I guess, a positive on your record?
Yeah. He's also up to his eyeballs with the Colorado fossil fuel money.
Yeah.
The fracking governor, I think, is...
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Yeah.
rough pass.
I stand by my pass then.
Okay, so yeah, I mean, we should include another part of this, is that if you have oil or blood on your hands, then that's, you know, part of your record and your reputation.
Oh, for sure. Well, and supporters. I think we went over that a little bit with supporters.
Yeah.
But platform,
so you might as well just say you have oil on your hands as a way of just eliminating yourself from this running.
You know, and the blood on your hands, I mean, like, that was a big reason Hillary lost in 2008.
Yeah, I mean, people still remembered Libya, so...
Which Biden voted for it, right?
Of course.
Yeah.
What a terrible war. Anyway. Next, Governor Jay Inslee of Washington.
I couldn't wait for him.
The only candidate who's making climate change the central plank of his candidacy, and so he's kind of closer to the top of my list than the bottom.
I agree. I don't know what he looks like, but I agree. I've heard a couple, like, long-form interviews with him, and I was very impressed.
Yeah, an outspoken progressive executive, yeah. Mm-hmm. He's done some good things in Washington, so...
Yeah, for sure. I think he was popular, too, right?
I'm not going to look up his...
Yeah, but that matters to me, like, just in general, like, as a senator... Especially if they've had a re-election, you know, mm-hmm. are they popular in their state? Is a, we'll get to mayors, but is a mayor popular in their city? Because, I don't know, like you have to, that kind of factors into record for me.
Sure. As well it should.
Yeah.
Well, and supporters.
Yes, yes, yep. Yeah, definitely. Yeah, but they'd be the most knowledgeable supporters.
Yeah, but they may or may not volunteer for the candidate, which is, you know, again, another thing. All right, so Inslee, I guess I don't know very much about him, but I like what I hear.
The weird thing about Inslee is he's, and in general, I would say if you were to focus a campaign on one issue, it seems like it leaves you open to... Because you have to get really specific about that issue then. And you have to make stances within the issue. So you have to say, I think carbon tax is, you know, the way to do it. Or, you know, whatever it is. And, you know, like, there's no polling data on a lot of the details of these things. And so it's kind of risky. I don't know. I don't know. I just think the chances are so low with that strategy, as much as I like it.
Well, we'll see how it goes forward. I mean, we're still, like, less than a year now, but still a long way out from anybody stepping into a voting booth.
Yeah, when do the debates start? They must start pretty soon.
June, July?
Yeah.
Somewhere about that.
I feel like this is going on too long before debates. They should either just have, like, maybe not even more debates, but spread them out and start earlier.
Mm-hmm.
Or
some of these people out.
Or just literally don't let anybody campaign until like a month before that. Other countries do that.
Sure.
There's no reason.
I mean, it should give people more time to organize.
Yeah, you can like put in like a thing that allows you to like garner resources, but you can't actually start like spending more than X amount of money or something like that until Y date.
Right. No mass media buys. That could be some interesting. But next, and perhaps the victim of mass media, Amy Klobuchar.
Yeah,
bitten her in the face.
Sounds like there's a few victims of Amy Klobuchar too. Well, she had sort of a lack of like much reputation, and so it allowed one little. I feel like if that exact same story came out about Donald Trump, Bernie Sanders, or even Joe Biden, or even Elizabeth Warren. If that same story came out about them, it would be factored into... I mean, shit, we have almost an example of this, like with Biden. This is just one of many things people can say positively or negatively about it. But when your only thing that people know about Amy Klobuchar is the one story that came out about her being mean to her employees, which probably a lot of people, honestly, rightly or wrongly, don't care about, it just doesn't look good when it's the only blip on the radar.
I mean, I would consider that it's a pretty big blip, especially considering it's a pattern of misconduct. It's not like just one or two employees. It's like a lot of... It is a part of her reputation. So however much grit she has to campaign with, it's not going to get her very far ahead. Or it's certainly not getting, getting her into the front of the pack.
Yeah. Well, yeah, I mean, it's... Her reputation right now is not helping her.
No.
I just think that it's... I mean, like, if that story were to come out about Hillary Clinton, I might have helped her with votes in 2016.
Yeah, and I suspect when people start looking at her voting record, even before her time as senator, when she was AG for Minnesota, that's probably going to not help her at all either.
Yeah, it's hard to imagine anyone's AG record helping them. Mm-hmm. Besides, you were an AG, that could help. I mean, kind of like, if you don't look into it. But it's like, no one's going to give you credit for a good case properly
adjudicated, no.
Like, you, that doesn't give you points, and that's just a reality. I don't think that's necessarily not fair ideal, but...
Not putting people in jail seems to be pretty popular.
No, I mean, I don't know. We're within living memory of that being a major, like... presidential election defining issue was the unpopularity of not putting someone in jail, or let's just say the popularity of putting people in jail. But yeah, like the Willie Horton and all that, I mean,
that led to Joe Biden making that statement in the Senate about how they've or not the Senate, but I think the House then, but anyways, about how they've made everything the but jaywalking a death penalty case.
It's a good line. No, wait, was he said that?
Yeah, said that.
But I thought he was, like, voted for all of those draconian prison bills.
Yeah, he was. He said it as a mark of pride.
Oh.
He was proud of that fact.
Okay. Because that's, like, a really good sarcastic zinger.
Yeah, if it only worked, it's a sarcastic zinger.
Okay, you
know, well. Darkest timeline, that's where we are now.
Yeah. So, I mean, I do think, like, I think overall, especially the left, has had a significant change of heart on this. I don't know if it's all the way, though, and I don't know if it's enough to... I don't know. Like, I'm skeptical of the prosecutor background, like if I'm predicting things, being a bad thing for her or Kamala. But if I'm judging it myself... I don't know. Even if I do think negative things, I honestly don't. It's not disqualifying for me.
I will say it's kind of for me.
They don't... I know that they execute the law, but they don't... They don't... You know, they are working... They have their hands tied behind their back more so than any other, like, statewide elected office. I feel. Like... But go ahead.
At the time, that... position draws a certain type of ambitious personality. People were willing to, like, you know, get things done as opposed to doing what should be done.
Yeah, but I think there's also a, like, people who want to be more, like, in a positive way, more directly involved. I mean, you know, like... Instead of kind of making vague laws about what I think should be illegal, I want to make sure people who break laws, you know, pay the consequences. And, I mean, on the face of it, I know it's a complicated thing, but on the face of it, I mean, it is. That's noble.
Hmm.
And maybe not prosecute. I mean, that's the thing. Like, you do have to look at, because, like, not prosecuting people who you think should not be prosecuted and doing all you can for that is something good. But it's like, well, okay.
You get no attention for it.
What was that?
You get no attention for it. There's no record behind that.
Yeah. Yes. I filed these papers in the court, so you're... These are 500 cases we are not pursuing, and we will bog down the legal system with all of our inaction. So I don't know. Klobuchar, I don't know. Popular in Minnesota, though. Got that. That's like literally why she started a presidential campaign.
Yeah, I don't know if Minnesota is close to the heart of the country politically anymore.
Curious. Yeah. You think?
I mean, the country seems to be lurching right. I mean, at least Wisconsin is.
Shit. You made me remember last night. I was trying to get through the podcast.
Without all right.
I don't know. I mean, I think, yes, on a, like, decades-long time scale, Wisconsin is lurching right. And I do think Wisconsin is the nexus of all politics. So, yes, I think Minnesota. But I don't know if Wisconsin shifts 5 points to the left in 2020, it'll look like we're following Minnesota. And all of a sudden Minnesota, like, I think, yes, right now Wisconsin is that. But I could see Minnesota being maybe on a forward leaning direction.
Well, they're certainly ahead of us.
You know, that being said, is Klobuchar the most representative of that? Like, when I think Minnesota liberalism nowadays, is she even the first name that comes to mind?
I can't think of any other Minnesota elected officials that I know of.
Well, there's Keith Ellison. There's...
Well, he went and became the Minnesota's AG, so...
Well, he's still an elective...
Yeah, but not a national elected official.
But, I mean, he recently was. Up until a couple years ago, but, I mean, you know, Al Franken was fairly prominent.
Mm-hmm.
So if I think of, like, his brand of politics and stances and priorities... Or even Ellison's, which, you know, I don't know. Like, they both seem way to the left of Klobuchar.
Yeah, way to the left. What is her ranking?
Oh, I'm sure it's not that high. But she's racking up big wins in Minnesota. You know, she's able to corral in the Democrats in Minnesota to vote for her. And it seems to be, based on her compared against other statewide elections there... for, like, governor, or, like, the other Senate. They had two Senate elections recently. And she won by way more than the other Democrats. So she's pulling in someone from the center and right, and her, you know, she believes, presumably, that she can do that on a national level. But it's like, when all you have is this mean boss story, like, how are you doing that?
Yeah, maybe she's avoiding the limelight right now until the debates to try to take some of that stink off.
She has to get something positive in there before then. Because, like, that's what we said about, one of the other people who's forgettable, Castro or someone. But that person does not have anything nearly as negative as Klobuchar. So that might be a good strategy if you don't have this big bad story that came out 2 days before your announcement.
Mm-hmm. I mean, and to be fair, Cohen probably would make a pretty practical fork.
Yeah, you think? What kind
of? I mean, it's kind of got the tines like a fork.
Yeah, but the really long, like, fine-toothed ones, that's more of like almost like a butter knife or something. You need one of those, like, ones that it's like has, it's almost shaped like a fork, but it has maybe 10 prongs, and it's kind of wide and plastic. Those would be great. You could get up a bunch of your food with that.
All right, so next we have Mayor Wayne Messam of Miramar, Florida.
I don't know enough
Well, it appears that he's trying to make a stance in favor of more or tighter gun regulation.
Oh, interesting. Yeah, he's
trying. If that's all his candidacy is about, then bless him.
Yeah, he's young, too. Like, I think he's the youngest. I think he became 44? The youngest. How old?
44. I don't.
Oh, okay, so he's older than
Buttigieg. No, Tulsi Gabbard is younger than him.
No, I was going to say, though, like, mayors in America.
Mm-hmm.
But, he's definitely on the young side. And it's from a decently big city. Which city is it?
Miramar.
Can't
say I've heard of it, but... I'm not sure where that is off the top. Oh, it's just outside Miami. It's like one of the Miami suburbs.
Hmm. Okay.
It's in Broward County, so if he can get Broward County, he can win Florida.
He can win the election if he wins Broward County.
He might actually win the whole national election.
his whole campaign is just campaigning in that one county. If 2000 taught us anything...
that matters.
Yeah, I don't know. I think he just announced so recently, and it kind of came out of nowhere that, for all these candidates, it's like a little bit time will tell. They have to prove some stuff. But, that maybe is doubly or triply so for him.
Yeah, the winds are working against him, so to speak.
So, that's not good in Hurricane Alley. Who's next?
Roberto O'Rourke.
Oh, I didn't know who you're talking about for a second. His first name's Roberto?
Yeah.
I didn't know that. I honestly didn't know that.
Beto is just a nickname that his father...
I knew Beto was a nickname, but I thought it just was for Robert. Like, I didn't know he actually had a Hispanic first name.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, interesting.
So, Representative O'Rourke. This guy.
Former representative.
Former representative, sorry.
Hey, speaking of God bless him, let's not, before we, express what I expect to be dissatisfaction, or at least a lack of enthusiasm for Beto O'Rourke, I applaud him for running a good campaign against Ted Cruz.
He lost. How do you
okay, lose? Well, hey, other people have lost by more.
Mm-hmm. It should have been his. It was his seat to lose. He should have, like, it was a blue wave election against literally the most unpopular person in Congress. I don't think he lose that fight, but yeah.
They almost had too much money, I think.
Mm-hmm. Just became frothy.
Yeah, and it's like, I mean, if you're not, because I'm pretty sure they weren't able to spend it all. They literally weren't able to spend it all.
Which is probably why he's got money in his coffers now.
And so, I don't know.
Okay, let's check his Trump score. Because, that might as well be a thing. He has not a good Trump score. He's like in the middle of the Republicans. Let me just check this, but it looks like he's in the middle of the Republicans. Okay. Well, he's closer to the line than, for instance, Mark Pocan is.
To, like, the middle line?
Yeah, he's way closer to the middle. His score is not good.
He's... He doesn't have a record, right? I mean, unless he's able to really focus on issues and just kind of be like, yeah, ignore those votes. Ignore those ones over there. If you ignore all of my votes with Trump, I have the highest anti-Trump score around.
I'm the most progressive if you ignore everything that I've ever voted for or said.
No, according to Joe Biden, would be the most progressive candidate in the race.
A Delaware Democrat, he also voted in favor of the bankruptcy law that, besmirched Clinton's reputation because she couldn't point to her Senate record because of that.
Yeah. Oh, geez. I just do not get the... Okay, no Biden. So, Beto, he seems... He's just kind of annoying. I don't know.
Yeah. He's obviously being groomed, right?
How do you mean?
Well, like, he's from a political dynasty. His father is a longtime mayor of El Paso. His wife is the daughter of a super wealthy developer, real estate mogul or something out there.
Like a billionaire. This is kind of putting what was already a negative spin into a more negative spin on the "I was born to run for president" line. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, that was terrible.
Okay, JFK.
Right.
So,
I'm sorry, but we don't have a gentry anymore, and you're certainly not born into it.
Sir, the French Revolution called.
Capital gains tax now.
So, yeah. Yeah, that's okay. Why? Okay. I think it's almost, I don't know, maybe there's someone listening to us right now who does not have a negative opinion of Beto, but let's just ignore those people for a second. Because, like, to me it's such an obvious thing. I don't get why I'm voting for Beto.
Yeah, there's no compelling reason to vote for him.
I feel like not enough of these candidates, it just speaks to, like, the kind of, I don't mean, like, ideological, like, policy conservatism, but, like, a sort of, like, live life conservatively mentality of the kind of Democratic political class. I'm not talking about radical policies, but, like, radical, like, strategy. And not enough of them are thinking about why we should vote for them. They're all thinking, like, oh, here's what I think you should run, Amy Klobuchar, because there's not bad things about you out there. Or, like, Beto, like, well, there's not enough, like, you're good enough type thing.
Right. I mean, the only interesting thing about Beto was his association with the Cult of the Dead Cow, but somebody immediately, like, got on that, on Twitter on that. When I posted that, I was like, no, we disavow him, so...
Wait, they disavowed him?
Yeah, like somebody who said that they were also a member of the Cult of the Dead Cow disavowed his participation in the organization. Oh.
Wait, was Beto cool with that? Or did he claim he was?
I think there was a book coming out about the Cult of the Dead Cow, or there was like some massive reporting on it, and it came out, what, 3 or 4 weeks ago? Like he was somehow involved with it. Apparently, when writing blog posts or something, or, you know, the contemporaneous equivalent of blog posts.
Yeah.
Weird poetry, like teenage shit on the internet. But yeah, it did sound like he was involved in some, shall we say, some of the more activist hacking that the cult also was doing, so.
Huh, yeah.
Yeah, it's tough to know what he stands for.
Living in Wisconsin, I care about the bad things that, like, the Trump administration has done at the border, you know, the kids and all that, and the refugees and the migrants. But I do find it a little hard to broadly speaking about immigration and border policy care that much, just being, like, really honest. It's like, yeah, I care, but it's like I care about all of these other things more, and I feel like Beto may be able to stake out, and maybe Castro from being down there too. I don't know, may be able to stake out if immigration. I feel like the Trump people double down on all that shit, and that just becomes the daily headline news for the next 2 years. Is something to do with immigration, the border every day. He might have interesting things to say about it, Beto, and he might be a good counter, and that might be electable.
Mm-hmm.
But just from my seat in Madison, Wisconsin right now, I just don't have a grasp on exactly why he would be, besides he's from El Paso.
Yeah, I mean, I don't think he exactly has a strong claim on the immigration platform, but I think he might be underestimating how important it's going to be to 2020. Like, even here in Wisconsin, yeah. Like, OCAN's, like, continuing FOIA argument with ICE is pretty indicative of why.
I agree.
Yeah. Really, really matters.
Yeah.
I worry about my neighbors, like, whether or not they come home at night or got nabbed by ICE at the factory.
Not the people living in the house next to you, though, because we...
Yeah, well, on either side.
Okay. Yeah, I mean, it's one of those things where it's like, I care about this, but if I were to actually list out all of my cares, I don't know. Here's where I stand. It is important, and I would love if my representatives, and my representative is, working on this.
Right.
I guess it's, I'm almost kind of trying to be like an unenthusiastic counter to all the racist enthusiasm on the issue in places like Wisconsin.
Mm.
Like, why the fuck do you care about this? The only immigrants you deal with are, or, you know, that you're around even, you know, is like mm-hmm. people who work on, like, in your community and, like, you should have a positive opinion of.
It's the people who see that enforcement as a positive rather than as a negative, like I do, which is why these metrics are so double-edged.
It's just, but it's so, like, I hate the mentality of, we have these laws should be enforced, they are criminals are bad, they are bad. That logic has just always fucking bugged me.
Yeah, it's really simple, and I don't know, it's just, it draws people to conclusions that aren't necessarily valid.
Yeah, because as soon as you get to the they are bad, you've assumed all the other steps.
Right.
You've condensed them down into a folder that you will never open up again and apply context or nuance to.
All right, those people are just felons. They can never own weapons or vote ever again, and they'll probably just end up in and out of the system until, you know, they aren't anymore.
All right, who's next on our list?
Next is Bernie Sanders.
We've probably spent hours talking about Bernie Sanders on our podcast.
Yeah, I'm all in favor. I mean, he's
the
front runner. I guess we could debate that point. Is Bernie Sanders the front runner right now?
If we're not counting Biden, I think he is. And I think that is a tough position to be in. What was that?
If we do count Biden, I think he is.
I think that's a more debatable I mean,
just by the demographics of their supporters, Bernie draws the younger crowd. The kids love him.
Yes. I have very, very, very little change in my opinion of Bernie Sanders right now as a presidential candidate, or a year ago as a presumptive presidential candidate, or a year before that as a presidential candidate.
Yeah, I mean, I kind of agree with or disagree with some of the stances that he's taken in the interim, but
on his what? Platform
is basically the same.
You mean like actual votes he's taken while in?
Well, on stances that he's made, like kind of not exactly parroting the Trump administration's view of Venezuela, but not discouraging him from taking a more active role in the ongoing soft coup that's happening there.
I think it's interesting to see him make political calculations.
Mm-hmm.
I don't think he's, if his heart's not totally behind it, I don't think he's good at hiding that. And luckily it doesn't come up much. Because I think Bernie's heart is behind most of his stances and votes. I don't know. But, I don't know. In a general, you know, the thing about it is that, like, I'm all for, well, I'm not literally all for Bernie. But, you know, I'm all for Bernie. Very, very good chance of getting my personal vote in a primary. But I it's like I've seen this all before, so I don't know. I'm just not terribly, like, interested at the moment. He will have a very high placement on my list, and that will very unlikely change.
Hmm.
There just may be some shifting around the top every now and then, but there's no reason for me to, like, precipitously drop him or to not consider other people either.
Right. Well, but with this many candidates, the 20-25% that he draws makes him the clear front runner.
Yeah. Yeah. And I think, yes. No. I think There's enough polling evidence that I personally wouldn't put money on Biden. I just think we can't just ignore polling evidence as, like, you know, there's, like, repeated, like, many different replications that he is technically leading polls. But I think there is a strong case to be made, despite that, that, yes, I agree with you, that he could be the favorite nonetheless. If I were a betting man. So who's who's after that?
Elizabeth Warren. We're getting towards the end of the list.
I like Warren a lot.
Right? She's got some really great platforms. I really like the universal child care plank that she put out. That's like puts her even to the left of Bernie.
Yes.
And like the practical progressivism is where her candidacy could really shine if she comes out with some really good policy formulations.
Agreed. She is probably one of the most impressive candidates in my voting lifetime in terms of, like, you got a question, I got an answer, and you will probably like my answer.
Yeah, she's got the weak foreign policy chops.
So. I was just thinking that earlier today when thinking about the show, I was like, but the one thing about her is that I don't know, foreign policy, I think she has room to prove herself. I don't know where that's going to go, and I don't know if she knows where it's going to go.
Ending the empire is going to be a pretty big plank, or I guess discussion in 2020. But we already know how the other side views it.
That's interesting. I don't know. Who wants? It's a tough sell to a population to end your foreign hegemony over other, over influence around the world.
It's a tough argument, but I think it could be made.
Yeah, I think the way you do it is through a very aggressive. I hate the word aggressive. A very forward leaning. Progressive social domestic policy where you tie the two together, which is kind of what she did. Like, what little I have heard about her in the campaign talk about foreign policy has been along those lines, and I can see it working, I guess.
I just worry she's going to get subsumed into the keeping people safe narrative.
It's hard to not see it eventually turning into that. I think it's
because that's obviously the first the first criticism of the end of empire argument. Yes. It's like, you don't want people to be safe. It's like, well, not exactly, but based on what you think keeping people safe looks like, then yes, I guess.
Yeah. Yep. That's Now turn that into a soundbite that helps you.
Yeah, that's tough.
Hold on. Last thing about Warren is I just want to say I've always liked her since before she was in elected office, and the only reason I am not an enthusiastic supporter is this sort of I have to talk myself into it. It feels like no one else is. It's kind of like you don't want to be the first person to stand up and clap, and I just feel like no one else is getting up and screaming, "Yeah, Warren." Okay, I'm just waiting for one person to do it, and so I think maybe when the debates heat up, I could see support for her snowballing because I just think she's just beaming with I can do this. I have all of the plans. I don't know.
Well, speaking of snowballing, we can actually one more point about Warren is that her announcement was pretty historic, right? Wasn't that where the IWW fought? What battle was that?
Is that where she?
Yeah, that was where it was.
That's interesting.
Warren's Massachusetts. Sorry, I'm just trying to. Yeah, Everett Mill.
That's that's really
historically labor strike.
Pro labor.
Yeah. And compared that to Amy Klobuchar's, well, shall we say, snowball announcement. It relied more on the visual aspect rather than the historical aspect, which most people seem to be ignoring.
I liked the snow. I mean, it looked cool.
Yeah, but it was more visual than substantive.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, definitely.
I mean, it was a great visual, and we're always going to remember Amy Klobuchar's presidential run, if not just for that moment.
Yeah.
It really speaks to, you know, the Midwestern part of me that
yes, somebody it does.
Oh.
Yep, nope, I totally, like... Yeah, growing up and living in Wisconsin, when you see a picture of someone like doing something in the snow that's not normally done in the snow, you're always like, oh, I know what that would feel like. All right, and so what? Who is Buttigieg left?
No, we've got a couple more.
Okay, people. Who else is left?
The next is probably the worst single candidate to have announced so far and filed. Who's... Marianne Williamson.
I don't know who that is.
She is a grifter of the worst sort.
Oh, I think I might. Okay. Wait, what did she do?
Spiritual advisor for Oprah. She's written books. She's kind of a terrible person.
Okay, yep. So, pass. Yeah. We're good on that one. Well, can I put her on the bottom of my list, then?
Easily, right?
Okay.
But
okay.
She's going to be competing with the next person on our list.
Okay.
Andrew Yang.
I don't know much about him either, to be honest.
He's the choice for Richard Spencer. He's
what?
Being embraced by the alt-right.
Wait, why?
Because, his one plank is that he came out really strong for a universal basic income.
And there's... But
alt-right is co-opting, well, has long sought to co-opt that kind of point by using that to demolish the welfare state.
Oh.
Yeah, and which ultimately results in more racism. Because a welfare state without a UBI without a welfare state just pushes people in the margins even further into the margins.
Huh. Is he aware of Richard Spencer supporting him?
Yeah, he's kind of gotten quiet since then. Ew. The Yang Gang is not as much of a thing. Hopefully.
But I thought he made the donation.
Oh, he did? Well,
I think he did.
I mean, probably because of people like Richard Spencer and other supporters.
Oh, great.
Yeah, so we also have to... Well, and that kind of could lead us to a good discussion to, like, the spoiler aspect. I mean, you may want to say that Bernie Sanders is a... Or some people may say that Bernie Sanders is a spoiler for his participation again, or Joe Biden is, but... We have people like Andrew Yang who are almost literally Trojan horses who are trying to spoil this ongoing debate. I mean, it's really fucked up if the universal basic income is, as an idea, is just fucking renounced because it's associated with some pretty terrible people and their terrible interpretations of the idea.
Yeah. Oof. Yeah, they're willing to tank the whole ship to make, like, their point or have their interest served.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, that's...
And, you know, we can kind of also look at that from the progressive end. The centrist Democrats are also throwing in their Joe's Biden and other spoilers to muddy the waters.
They're really open about it. Like, Bloomberg and fucking Starbucks guy.
Schultz, yeah.
Yeah, the people who, like, should be center-right, but, like, wait, when did they become center-left?
Overton window shifted so far right that it's, like, out the other side of the clock and resting on the coffee table.
Yeah, and a lot of billionaires don't like to, like, be told, you know, like, they're like, I get up and do the exact, you know, they're like, I am who I am. No, you guys are the ones moving, not me. And so, they're like more willing to change parties because they view themselves as above party.
Yeah, they're more interest oriented than ideologically centered.
God damn it, that sucks.
Yeah.
It just annoys me so much. It's like the left's like, okay, can you like give us money and then just shut up? Oh, no, you can't. Oh, God damn it. We didn't sign up for this.
Right?
So now we're the party of billionaires? What the fuck?
Damn it, what the fuck?
Or we're the party of vocal billionaires. They have, like, Richard Mercer, who, like, keeps his fucking mouth shut and just puts his money towards, I mean, evil things. But, you know, like, they get shit done.
Mm-hmm. All right. I guess now we can go to the unannounced candidates. Now it's time for, do we want to do Mayor Pete or Mike Gravel first?
Let's talk about, let's talk about Gravel. How many people do we have left? Just those two?
Just those two.
Oh, okay.
If we're not talking about Joe Biden.
Yes. Biden will not be mentioned in this podcast. So Mike Gravel is back at it again after also running in 2008. And didn't he run one, like, in the 70s or something like that?
He was 80s? In the 70s. I don't think he ran then. Oh,
he ran for vice president once.
Oh, whatever then, yeah.
Which is... I don't. Even in the article I saw referencing it, it implied that people were confused by someone running for vice president at the time. Or not confused, but like it was like novel. It was like different even then.
And now he's just running to spoil the race again to try to tilt the scales even further.
Well, he's trying. I mean, you know, we're bringing up.
Spoilers.
I was going to be a little more. you brought up. Like ending the empire before, and mm-hmm. I mean that's kind of what his thing is.
That's what he's been about since he was a senator. Like this is the guy who read the Pentagon Papers into the public record because he could.
Well, that wasn't completely known. There is some risk to himself doing that.
I mean, sure, but you know, because I think he. Arrested for it on the spot. He was allowed to do it.
Oh, yeah, yeah. So, yeah, he was physically... But I think he was involved in a court case after he did it.
Hmm.
And essentially, I don't think it created the precedent, but it, like, solidified the precedent that, like, this freedom legislatures have.
Yeah. On some level, this is like Hank Aaron or Robin Yount returning to the team for one last trip around the base. I mean, you're not going to tell him no, he can't be on the stage because he's such a legend, but...
Well, I mean, if he does it, he has to get the funders, I guess. But
funding.
I like that... I like that there's a metric so that we can, like, understand it. It's going to really fucking suck if there's, like... If, like, Howard Schultz gets in and he, like, doesn't have... I don't know. Like, if there's some sort of shadiness with someone getting on that stage who did not meet that metric...
Well, he's not trying. Schultz isn't trying for the Democrat nomination.
Well, yeah, not now.
Yeah. Like, I don't even think even then he was.
No. I'm saying, I'm proposing in the future. Yeah. There's someone like him jumping in at the last second and being like, you know, like... I'm Donald Trump, but, you know, not Donald Trump, but, like, hey, I'm this famous, Oprah or some shit. Like, just a name recognition and, like, political news buzz they get on the stage, like, in July.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know.
But, yeah, he said that his funding is all going to go towards campaign expenditures, and when he does bail out, the excess is just going to be donated to Flint.
Oh, interesting. Yeah.
That's kind of why I'm going to give him some money.
Oh, yeah. That's cool. So, has he done any interviews yet?
I don't think so.
Yeah, I would like to see that.
I need to see him give a speech before I'll, you know, be 100% behind him. If 2008 was a while ago and he was old then, I'm sure, he obviously doesn't care about his own physical well-being, but...
He's old. He's elderly. Yeah. I've always thought...
It's ageist of me to say that, I guess.
But... I see, but I am a little ageist. I would prefer not to have an old president. But if I really have some trust in the vice president, then that's fine.
Hmm.
Like, I just don't... Like, John McCain with... crazy old what's her name, Sarah Palin, you know, that was, not that I was really going to vote for John McCain, but, like, that's disqualifying to me.
Hmm.
You got white hair and you have a crazy person as your vice presidential running mate? No. Then you, yeah. That is totally, like, if, you know, if Bernie or Biden have just, like, a complete nutbag. See, I wish there was a little bit more of, like, a public vetting process for the VP.
Hmm. Yeah.
You know, because, like, that's kind of, like, let's say Bernie Sanders picks Andrew Yang. Wait, let's say, and I'm just, you know, I'm half joking here, but let's say Bernie Sanders picks Richard Spencer. Like, we already voted for him. Like, if he, because they don't do that part until close to the, like, basically, after most of the primaries.
Yeah.
And that's really undemocratic. I mean, I guess, it's like, you're supposed to trust the decision making of the person you voted for president.
Yeah, and that got the Republican Sarah Palin, so whatever.
Yeah. They got, like, one of the most revered political national figures. I mean, you may love him or hate him, but, like, all in all, he has a very positive thing over his career, a positive, you know, approval of the people over his career, and he picked the worst possible vice presidential candidate ever. Like, and if there had been an election, I don't think she would have won. Although she did draw big crowds. So.
Yeah, that's about the only thing. It's like, but it's the same reason Trump draws a big crowd. People just want to see him fall flat in his face, or I guess they agree with his stupid points, but...
Well, it's kind of like seeing... Like, I went to a Weezer concert recently. And I like Weezer. And I didn't actually go because of Weezer. I went because of the Pixies. And... There's something about they played excellently, but like so do they on their albums, and you don't really like they're just up there playing instruments. Why am I going to see the live show if they're just playing? But it was still great, but I can't really point to why I had to be there. And I don't regret it, but I think that's the thing with like going to see a Trump rally. I assume it's like. You could say you were there because there's this crazy thing and it's called the Donald Trump Show.
Yeah. Man, just the violence associated with that, though, I can't...
Well, I mean, if I had a different skin color, I would not go.
Well, or be a journalist or pick up a camera.
Yeah, or worse, be a black journalist.
A black female journalist.
A black female photo journalist. Yeah. Yeah. You would not want to. Ugh. Like, Hispanic? At least... I mean, I haven't heard of really violence against Hispanics at his rallies, but, like, how can there not be? Especially going into 2020, because he's only going to go harder on this, right?
Yeah, this is only going to get worse.
Huh.
Hmm.
And speaking of the future, the last candidate,
Mayor Pete.
Yeah. This inspired us doing this episode. We haven't done an episode in a while, and we kind of like agreed on sort of our top and bottom, except for Mayor Pete.
Hmm.
It's interesting.
Yeah, he's closer to my bottom than the top.
Yeah, and he's close to my top.
Like that McKinsey stuff. Like, you know, you want to go change the world and then go work for like possibly the most evil company in the world.
Hmm. Yeah. That I'm sympathetic to more so his comments about the company afterwards than having worked there.
Yeah, I mean,
or I should say I'm more sympathetic to the critique of his comments afterwards. I mean,
yeah, because it is known. It's not like the company just suddenly pulled off the Scooby-Doo mask. Like, it was known well before he started working there how terrible it was, so... I don't know, it's tough to sympathize with that.
I don't know. I mean, like, okay, so... We'll probably refer to this article. It was in Current Affairs by Nathan Robinson, and it's sort of a review of... what's the name of Buttigieg's book, On My Way Home?
Mm-hmm. Shortest Way Home.
Shortest Way Home, sorry. And...
Is that him being short? Sorry.
It probably is. Yeah, I mean, he's kind of like a small, nerdy dude. But anyway, in that article, the guy, like, the author, was really dismissive of the idea of, like, Buttigieg's self view of how he was when he was, like, just getting into college or just getting out of college, you know, young Pete Buttigieg, and...
He makes some pretty striking areas of omission in his book. I don't know how you would go to someplace like Harvard Square and not notice the flock of homeless and other, shall we say, underprivileged people.
I don't know. I mean, it's not that he didn't. We don't know what he noticed. We know what he wrote about. And I think that you can make the same critique of what he wrote about, but I think it's more, it's possibly more nuanced, because you're writing to show a point in that chapter or passage, and you can't include all details that might have their own great points to make.
Sure, but it's the same error of omission that he makes when discussing the constituents of South Bend.
Yeah. Although, I was reading earlier today that, you know, that tearing down houses thing?
Mm-hmm.
Which is kind of like...
Tearing down 1,000 houses in 1,000 days?
Yeah, that's sort of an interesting thing where it's like, okay, that might not be the thing I do, but constituents... You know, keep them happy.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know. But someone, one of his so apparently the article I was reading today, which was on Vox, which actually references the Nathan Robinson thing. It's kind of a little bit both sidesy. It's like, you know, here are some bad things people are saying about him. Here are some good things people are saying about him. And they brought up how that his supporters and critics in South Bend both agree that he is a good listener. That it's like, hey, we don't like everything he does, but he will hear us out. Like, he will do that. So I think that undercuts the sort of, like, ignoring his... Because a lot of that may be minorities, or may be whoever. Anyway, but... So he tears down these houses, and it was worrying some of the people who... First of all, they did not tear down any houses people were living in, which was not made clear in Nathan Robinson's critique.
Yeah, it was like empty houses and...
He implied that this was harming people who can't afford to fix their house. Which is not exactly... It's people who can't afford to fix properties they own. Which is a difference from the poor person who's, like, living in the house.
Or aimed at the slumlord.
Yeah, and so this was... like, so they brought up in this article someone who is... was, well, it more was, but probably still is, a critic of Pete Buttigieg. And she, her family, or sorry, her and her husband owned 3 or 4 properties, but weren't really terribly wealthy. And they were planning on fixing them and flipping them.
Mm-hmm.
But one of them got sick. The husband got sick. And so they couldn't, he couldn't do the work. And so they were just holding the properties, I guess, until he got better is the idea. And then this tearing down houses thing came in. The city wants him to pay a bunch of money. And, you know, so, like, that was a pretty bad critique. On the other hand, there was someone who was in a somewhat similar situation, and they, the city actually, or is more of an advocate for people in that situation, and she spoke to the city setting up a fund and putting a lot of money into helping people fix these houses.
Right, and that's kind of what Blight has done, too, in some respects. They're trying to keep people in their homes so, you know, they don't end up empty. At least they were then.
Yeah, it's like, you don't... Yeah, I don't know. It said to me that maybe the worst things we can say about his record have a, I don't know, silver lining or another side to them. Doesn't make it all good. I think,
but
go ahead.
The error of omission, especially with the constituency of South Bend, is so glaring because that section of Indiana, I know from some measure of personal experience, has a kind of a bad problem with racism and, like, Hispanics and black people being like a genuine underclass. Like, what was it? There was a disproportionate, like, even the Nathan J. Robinson article cited that.
Yes, that poverty. So personally speaking, this is where it's like the candidate has to prove certain things. So, like, the burden of proof is on him to show me that he can speak intelligently and empathetically about the issue of race.
Mm-hmm.
Which is, honestly, I mean, this he's trying to weave a tough political path. And for a few weeks here, he has done that well. But, like, now keep that up, dude, for 2 years. And, I don't know, we'll see. Like, he's trying to kind of be like, hey, maybe white dudes in Indiana can be, like, pretty progressive liberals, too. We just have to do this differently or that differently.
Yeah, he's a big data guy. And, you know, however, if people spend their lives quantitatively studying things, they miss, like, the qualitative values that they should be addressing and, you know, trying to approach or change, depending on the case.
Yeah, I know. I mean, that's definitely a fair critique of, you have to be the human element. You can't give up your human element of your operation to the data.
And there's kind of a critique about several of these candidates where it's a forest and trees problem.
Yeah, that's it. Say more about that.
Well, okay, so Kamala Harris, for instance. Like, her record, she wants to say that her record is one to support women and getting children into school and such, but then she has, like, those glaring problems where she's put women behind bars for basically circumstances beyond their control when their children couldn't get to school on a reliable basis.
Yeah. That's interesting. It's kind of like, I mean, it's a little different, but it reminds me of, it's like the inverse of, I was listening to this in-depth thing about Reagan once, and they brought up how, like, report after report was, like, a genuinely, like, literally at one point, while, like, Governor of California, give the shirt off his back type of guy to anyone, and across numerous demographics and classes. But his policies were, like, light years away from that.
Mm-hmm.
And so you're sort of proposing, I mean, it's a little bit of a different, you know, she's still in elected office. You're pointing to as, like, her more, like, individual, how did she affect lives. Right. But, I don't know.
Well, we'll see how that plays out in, I guess, the coming months or year.
Yeah, I think, like, you know, we're so early in the, you know, election, obviously. You know, it's like, sorry, listeners, we did not do the disclaimer about how it's a long time until the 2020 election, and a lot will happen in the meantime. Like, we all know that.
But the one thing is that, like, if somebody doesn't have a platform on their fucking website that they've already announced, or they have merch available, then that's also a problem.
I think you can go... I don't even want to say you can go too much, but... Okay, here's one thing, staying on Buttigieg, but on this topic, where I actually really agree with Buttigieg. I was thinking it before I heard him say it. And that's where he's like, he feels it's disingenuous to feel like you have all the answers. And I actually agree with that. And I am, so, like, take Warren. Warren's putting out so many policies. And that's really great because it means she's smart, she's motivated, and she's interested. But almost none of this will get passed. Like, if you don't have a very complicit Congress,
mm-hmm.
You know, like, so what are your priorities? What are the things you're willing to sacrifice? what's your value system? What's your mindset? What's your, you know, how are you looking at these things? I made the comment the other day to our mutual friend in the printing industry that a weird way to judge a presidential candidate is that you know at some point they are going to have to sacrifice important things. They're going to have to do something that you as a voter think is terrible. But at some point, every politician, especially president, they're going to do something. It's like a law of nature. We can put fucking, like, Mahatma Bernie Sanders Jesus King Jr. in there, and they are going to do some fucking bad shit.
It's like any one of those people involved in that amalgamation has things about them that are pretty damning.
Well, yes, yeah, I can't even come up with anyone who's not, exactly. So I want to know that that person will be serious, thoughtful, and moral as they can be, as they think they can, within their mortal frame, be.
I mean, yes, but being an empty suit doesn't necessarily accomplish that. I think you're referring to that interview that Mayor Pete gave with Vice and his comments about, I don't want to be pinned into a corner about what I believe at this point.
Yeah, no, but I actually, well, I mean, that doesn't fully address what I'm proposing. No, correct. But I think it falls in line with, I think having policies and being educated about them can be a great strength. I don't think it is, people are too, how many people have you ever heard, like, say, like, yeah, but I want to know what they think about the policy, but they don't fucking go read the policies. And that's most voters. Like, so I'm just trying to be a little practical here, and I think Pete Buttigieg is too, and he's like, I don't think they have to have all the answers, because that just means they have to be held to account for things. But of course it's a balance. He can't go through the next year and a half without fucking giving us a better idea of where he wants to go with healthcare, immigration, climate change. It can't be like empty things. But I also don't think he has to have that right now.
Well, I mean, you should at least have some thoughts on it. Like, even just like a list of priorities. And I wasn't even referring to him. I was talking about Kamala Harris, which is a much more glaring problem.
Okay.
Somebody sitting in the Senate for
yes
years and should have that already lined up.
She's been supposed to be making those decisions the past, yeah.
I mean, you can look at her voting record, but again, it's only gets you so far.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. All right, so...
Well, hold on. But I think there's a, I just want to be clear that what I'm sort of thinking that me, and sort of like people don't openly say it, but kind of like what I'm positing is, as a way to look at how to vote, is, so take those elements you brought out earlier. Is that all of them you're kind of relying on some sort of trust. Some sort of almost faith in a way. Like, you can have evidence for it, but, like, you don't really know. Because it's all about you're voting for someone to represent you after the vote. After the election. Like, all of these people could be the most selfish, corrupt sociopaths that are just lying to us. Except for Record. Record is something you can...
Polar bears or something?
I don't know. Yeah, maybe they're going to beat seals in the White House. And I think there's a... I just think that you can't get away from the fact that there's a gut element. For voters out there, or maybe even like TV pundits or something, they are... Even for the ones that say, talk about evidence and policies and the nuance, I think there's a gut element that every single person factors into their vote. And I think that can't be ignored positively or negatively. So, like, I can't ignore your gut feeling that's bad about Pete Buttigieg because there's something... Well, I mean, I guess I can ignore it. It's my vote, goddammit. But I'm saying, you know, someone who's open-minded and reasonable shouldn't, as you shouldn't ignore my good gut feeling. And, you know, we have a year and a half for these things to either diverge or converge. Okay.
Yeah, we'll see how it plays out. But I guess before we close the episode, I promised our listeners the answer to that riddle I posed on Twitter yesterday about YouTube.
Can you say the riddle if someone didn't see it?
Bloomberg did a pretty in-depth business case while a profile into YouTube's kind of business practices and like how they've prioritized engagement over, shall we say, curating the content on their website.
Uh-huh.
And did you read the article?
I've read most of it, I think.
Did you catch why? Or the point that I posted in the tweet was that there's a fact that they stated in the article which demonstrates why YouTube will never, as a company, ever be able to get ahead of that content versus curation.
Okay. Let me think. Wait. So a fact in it. Because I was...
It was an offhand remark.
It was what?
One offhand, fucking subclause and a sentence in the article.
Is it something to do with engagement?
No, it's about one of the people involved.
Damn it. Oh! Ooh, wait. Let me see. Let me think back to what I read. Nope, I don't know.
Okay, so the problem with YouTube is that a person in charge of creating and maintaining relationships with content creators is also the person who's in charge of content mediation.
Oh.
This is a glaring conflict of interest, which, as part of the company's structure, cannot be overcome.
Huh. Yeah, I can see that then.
Yeah, you can't,
Yeah.
Person satisfied both halves because he's only going to be working just as a matter of time more on one than the other, and if they're going to do engagement, then he's not going to give a fuck about mediating the content.
Yeah, that kind of conflict of interest or similar kinds abounds in business and government, but I mean there's few bigger entities influencing all of us than
YouTube. Yeah. And the fact that kind of encouraging, shall we say, the fascist uptake and really problematic.
You have to police your fucking YouTube so hard.
Alright, I can't look for history or anthropology subjects. The only K-holes that I get into YouTube are puppy videos.
You have to curate it. You have to oh, I can't watch that, or I better watch out. Or as soon as you do watch something and you start seeing the effects of it, you have to be draconian and stomp that shit out.
Right? I don't even look at the recommended videos. It's I go to people whose content I know. And, because if you go into gaming and you go to, related content, it turns into brown shirts talking about their favorite way of LARPing Nords in Skyrim real quick.
So I don't even follow many accounts because I kind of worry about an account having different kinds of content or being closely linked to some, so I'm, but I am very stringent on getting rid of videos from my timeline, or not timeline, but I use the app, so it has kind of the whole thing as a recommended video scroll. And man, I just looking for shit in there to get rid of. There's any sort of red flags or imagery I don't like, it is gone, and I never want to see it again.
Apply that to a Democratic candidate.
I think we'd be we'd be out of content quick.
Yeah, I'm gonna get off on that note.
Yeah, for sure.
Today's sunny, today's rain. Destroy the myth that will break our chains. Break your chains!